Welcome to Risky Business News, a podcast on the recent news from the cybersecurity industry. This is Catherine Campano, and today's show is brought to you by Rumble, the asset discovery company. We're starting today's show with a summary on the incident that took place earlier this week where a threat actor flooded GitHub with more than 30,000 malicious repositories. We've asked Dan Lawrence, CEO and co-founder of ChainGuard, a company specialized in software supply chain security, to go over the incident and what could be done to prevent future similar attacks.
Hey everyone, my name is Dan Lawrence. I'm the founder and CEO here at ChainGuard. I've been working in the open source and software supply chain security space for a long time. So I'm going to be talking about a massive typo squatting attack that was carried out against a bunch of open source projects on GitHub Wednesday, August 3rd. The typo squatting is a type of attack where an attacker changes the name of a real project subtly to make it look like that real project, but it's not actually the same repository or package. These are really hard to detect because there's a lot of subtle ways to do it. You can change underscores to hyphens, mess around with Unicode characters, plurals, a bunch of different ways to carry out a typo squatting attack. This attack yesterday blew up on Twitter because of the large scale. Of course, this got a little bit over-sensationalized because of the scale of the attack and the panic until everyone found out what happened. But in short, there were over 35,000 fake repositories created, cloning after real projects, things like Kubernetes, cryptography libraries, programming languages, all designed with very similar sounding names. Fortunately, this was caught in the middle of the process, so no malicious commits were actually found in real projects. That's where a lot of the confusion came from. Only malicious code was slipped into these imposter repositories. Typically, there's a second phase to these attacks where somebody tries to trick innocent developers or innocent projects into incorporating one of these fake ones by not noticing the slight change in punctuation or case in the name. Thankfully, though, this one was caught in the middle, so nothing bad actually happened, but we don't know how bad this one really could have been if it hadn't been noticed and played out for longer. This attack was both the largest and most advanced I've seen so far. The scale of it, over 35,000 repositories, showed some clear automation, and the malicious commits were slipped in and hidden inside of real ones, and they were all semantically correct, too, so it'd be really hard to notice these if you were just casually looking around. To protect yourself against stuff like this, there's a couple different ways. As an end user, pay very close attention to your dependencies. It's going to be hard to notice typo squatting attacks like this, but these were all very recently created repositories with very few stars and little activity. As a maintainer, to prevent someone from creating an imposter repository or impersonating you, the only protection really available today is to sign your commits. There's a bunch of different tooling to do this, including a new one called GitSign that's part of the SigStore project. None of these are perfect and solve it completely, but if you pay enough attention and enough people start signing their commits, then it'll be easier for us to detect these across the open source ecosystem at scale.
Moving on to other news, the Forum of Incident Response and Security Teams, also known as FIRST, released this week version 2.0 of the Traffic Light Protocol, an unofficial standard used by the vast majority of incident response teams and security professionals to share information about malware and cyber attacks. Version 2.0 includes two major changes. The first is that the TLP white level has now been renamed to TLP clear. Second, there is now a fifth level where TLP amber now has a sub-level named TLP amber strict. According to FIRST, the original TLP amber level will allow cybersecurity professionals to share information within their organization and with their clients, while the new TLP amber strict level will only allow the sharing of information within an organization only, without being passed down to customers. As Claire Tills, a security research engineer at Tenable, told Risky Biz News this week, the changes are fairly minor and are only a refinement of the almost ubiquitous standard. On Twitter, Peter Bowen, a member of the Apple Cloud Security team, also said the new TLP Amber strict level will be very useful for major service providers, where TLP Amber was far too loose in terms of information classification, while TLP Red was far too restrictive. Moving on to news and hacks and breaches, a hacktivist group calling itself Guacamaya posted 2 terabytes of hacked emails and files from multiple mining companies located in Central and South America in a move to apparently expose environmental damage done in the region. According to CyberScoop, the hacked materials came from mining companies and government agencies in Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Ecuador, Guatemala, and Venezuela. In another story, security researcher Bob Dachenko said on Thursday that he identified two Elasticsearch clusters this week that contained almost 289 million records. Based on his analysis, the researcher believes the two databases contained highly personal information on Indian citizens. "My Indian colleagues say this is a very serious breach," the researcher wrote on LinkedIn, although the data's origin remains unclear. In information operation-related news, Ukraine's security service, also known as the SSU, said it dismantled a bot farm with more than 1 million bots that was being used to spread fake news and disinformation about the war in Ukraine in line with Russian propaganda. Officials said that during searches, they seized 5,000 SIM cards, which were used to create and maintain technical accounts, and 200 proxy servers for spoofing IP addresses to bypass network blocks. The SSU said the bot farm managed accounts on most of the popular social media networks, and they set up equipment in Kiev, Kharkiv, and Vinnytsia. Also, in related news, cybersecurity firm Mandiant also uncovered an information operation comprised of 72 news websites publishing pro-Chinese content. Mandiant said the websites presented themselves as independent news outlets from different regions across the world and published content in 11 languages. However, Mandiant said that based on technical indicators, they managed to link this operation to Shanghai Haixun Technology, a Chinese public relations company located in Shanghai. In addition, in a second report published on the same day, Mandiant researchers also linked the ransomware attack that crippled the IT network of the Albanian government last month to an Iranian politically motivated threat actor. Mandiant said the attack took place because members of a banned Iranian opposition party known as MEK were granted residence and planned to hold a conference in Albania. Mandiant said the attackers used a ransomware strain named RoadSweep, along with a backdoor named Chimney Sweep and a new variant of ZeroClear, a data wiping malware historically associated with Iranian state-sponsored operations. In other APT and cyber espionage news, Meta, Facebook's parent company, said in its quarterly threat report on Thursday that its security teams have taken action against two APT groups. Meta said that members of the Bitter and APT-36 cyber espionage operations had used its platforms to launch attacks against various targets across Southeast Asia. On top of this, Meta said it also took down several influence operations that were supporting propaganda or harassment in countries such as Russia, Israel, Malaysia, Pakistan, India, South Africa, Greece, and the Philippines. Now, in malware-related news, security researchers also spotted three new malware strains this week. The first is called RapperBot, spotted by CertChina and Fortinet. This is a new IoT malware strain that gains access to smart devices via SSH brute force attacks. The second is called Guisin and is a new strain of ransomware used in targeted attacks against South Korean companies. The third is named Woody and is a custom remote access Trojan used in attacks against Russian entities. Also in malware-related news, the US Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency also published on Thursday a list of the top malware strains of 2021. In no particular order, the list includes malware like Agent Tesla, Azorult, Formbook, URS Sniff, Lockybot, Nanocore, Cacbot, Remco, Strickbot, Gutloader, and Mouse Island, which is part of the Iced ID banking Trojan infection chain. Also, in an interesting report published on Thursday, Cisco's Talos security team said it also uncovered a new cloud service for cybercriminals that offers hosted command and control services for malware operations. Named Dark Utilities, the platform also allows customers to carry out various types of DDoS attacks. In other threat intelligence news, security researchers from Trunk said they also identified a new threat actor that has been using more than 1,000 IP addresses to scan websites for vulnerabilities and backdoors. They said the threat actors can be easily identified in logs because they use a user agent string where Mozilla is misspelled as Mozlilla. In law enforcement news, Dutch police said this week that they arrested a 20-year-old from the city of Limburg on charges of selling phishing panels via Telegram. In the now classic style of Dutch law enforcement, once they detained the suspect, police officers also left a message on his Telegram channel warning customers to stop buying illegal software, as the next time they might rent a phishing panel might be from an undercover police agent. In InfoSec industry-related news, IoT search engine Shodan, a tool often used by cybersecurity professionals, has announced its intention to stop accepting cryptocurrency payments, citing online scams and an undue burden on its support team. Also in industry news, threat intelligence outfit Flashpoint has acquired EchoSec Systems, a provider of OSINT services on topics like national security, public safety, and enterprise customers. In addition, InfoSec professionals also open-sourced some interesting tools this week. The first is a Google internal tool named Paranoid, which can be used to check for well-known weaknesses in cryptographic artifacts, such as public keys, digital signatures, and general pseudo-random numbers. The second tool comes from an Italian security researcher, is named Persistent Sniper, and is a PowerShell script that can hunt for common persistent methods across a network of Windows systems. In academic research news, in a research paper published last month, a team of Chinese academics also said they developed a new method to monitor fiber optics cables coming out of a building and then eavesdrop on conversations taking place inside. The crux of the research is that human speech or other noises create phase changes in the signal sent over fiber optics cables, which can then be picked up using a laser interferometer by a threat actor and then converted back into sound waves. Researchers said this technique could recover conversations from inside a building at distances of up to 1.1 kilometers down the cable. This concludes the news portion of our podcast. In our sponsored section, Piers Berry, principal security researcher at Rumble, is here to talk about a recent major vulnerability discovered in the firmware of almost 30 Draytech router models.
The Threat Labs vulnerability research team at Trellix recently reported a buffer overflow vulnerability affecting more than 25 models of Draytech Vigor routers. These routers are common in the small and medium-sized business space, making them a known target for state-sponsored attacks. This discovered vulnerability exists within the login page of the management interface and is trivial to exploit. Unauthenticated attackers can gain full control over a vulnerable device, even doing so remotely if the management interface is exposed to the internet. Draytech has released patched firmware for affected devices, which device owners should update to as soon as possible. You can get more details and learn how Rumble can find Draytech devices on your network. Just visit rumble.run/blog.
This is it for today's news. You can find links to all the technical reports mentioned in this podcast in our newsletter at riskybiznews.substack.com, and you can subscribe to our podcast via our website at risky.biz.